Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today. It's great to be back, by the way, too. It's been 3 weeks. I want to say a very special thanks to Judith Sears-Poisson, my producer, who has done an absolutely fantastic job on the air, as well as the producing. So she's been a busy person the last few weeks, and I know I've gotten some great reports on how she's handled herself on the air, and she's done a wonderful job. So thanks, Judith. I really appreciate it. Appreciate it very much. I'm glad to be back because I get to talk with an interesting person today who I've talked with a number of times. You know, it's a good book when you're not reading it or you finished it already, and the characters and the themes are kind of staying with you. You find your mind wandering back to scenes. You wonder about things that really stuck with you as you read them. And if you've enjoyed Sarah Rath's writing, you've probably experienced that lingering impression with her books. And we're happy to have her back to talk with us today about her latest book, The Waters of Star Lake. And it continues, sort of a continuing book from her earlier book, Star Lake Saloon and Housekeeping Cottages. And we had her on talk about that when that book came out. And I'm really great to have her back. Actually, I was in Canada for a week and took the book along with me and had a chance to read it. I really enjoyed it. It enhanced my vacation.
I'm glad to hear that, Larry.
Sarah, thanks so much for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
By the way, if you'd like to join in, I have a question for Sarah. I hope you'll join us. Maybe you've read her some of her previous books. What do you enjoy about them? Join us with those kinds of questions or comments. Maybe we can talk about gangsters, too, because she writes about gangsters in her latest book. But whatever your question, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. And don't be afraid to post a question or a comment on my Facebook page. Just go to The Larry Mueller Show, and you can do it right there. Well, this book, which I really did enjoy a lot, and it was kind of nice to have it sort of a continuation, because I was sad to see your earlier book end, kind of. You know, it was kind of...
That's always nice to hear.
Yeah, I was, and I thought, I wanted to read some more. So it's nice to have this new book.
Well, I did bring forward some of the characters from the previous book, but... Hannah Swan, who was in the earlier book, has gone off on some tangent somewhere in the world. We don't really know where. So I found out through several book clubs that a lot of readers didn't care much for Hannah. They said, we really didn't like your main character at the beginning. And I said, well, you weren't supposed to. She changes during the book. Didn't you like her at the end? Well, yeah, we liked her at the end, but we didn't like her at the end. Well, that's what it was about. It was about change. But with this book, I think there's a character, Natalie Waters, whom you will like in the beginning. She's a little softer than Hannah was. Yeah. And Hannah had kind of a sharp tongue and kind of a foul mouth, and Natalie's much more gentle.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's not to say that Natalie doesn't undergo some changes in this book.
She does. Did you know you wanted to continue this story when
When I did Star Lake Saloon?
Yeah, when you did
no,
the first one?
I did not. With that book, it was really important for me to talk about mining in northern Wisconsin. And I sort of wrote the book around that environmental situation. And then it took off, and I developed Ginger, who became almost too lovable to give up. So Ginger does make a reappearance in this book. And Lily, who is Hannah's mother, who, of course, played a very big part at the end of Star Lake Saloon, is back in this book. Yeah. And she built a cottage that she and Ginger share. Ginger is sort of her caretaker, and the cottage is called Lily Pad. Sort of like Lily's pad, but it's Lily pad. So Ginger and Lily live together, and they're quite a couple.
Yes, they are. You know, they're strong. Your characters, your women characters, are all pretty strong characters, I think.
You don't like the men?
I'm just focusing on the women for a moment.
I think Ginger's especially strong, yes. Yeah. And she does get something going in this book that everybody else has to sort of bow to and participate in. But the male characters, I think, are strong, too. There's a little bit of question about some of them, but and then there's some that are really evil, and I had lots of fun writing them.
Yeah, and there's at least one character in the book that you, a male character that you don't quite know how to take.
That's
him.
Right. Yeah,
he's got some good qualities, I guess.
Yes, that's the way I felt about him too. I thought when I started writing the book, he was going to be not good, and then I started liking him a lot, so I tempered him, and at the end of the book, I still didn't really know. He's a lot nicer. I think you can trust him, but I'm not quite sure yet. they sort of take on a life of their own. It's the strangest thing, Larry. You get up in the morning and sit down at the computer, and you start writing, and pretty soon it's almost as though I submerge myself into this cave or something, and I come up, and it's time for lunch, and I look, and the sun is shining, and I'm in reality. But these books are very visual for me. I see them. I participate in them. It's a world of make-believe that I'm in when I write it, and the characters are very, very real to me.
And so you don't know... You must have some sort of general idea of how things are going to turn out.
Yeah, I always outline everything before I start. Every book I do, I outline. But that doesn't mean that I'm going to follow it explicitly. Sometimes a character will say something, and I'll say, what? And then I have to pause and think, well, now what if? And then there might be a whole, you know, like a tree grows, a whole bunch of branches uh-huh. of ways that I could take this. And I like to do the one that's the most unexpected because that's the most interesting. Usually.
Sarah Rath, our guest today, she is the author of several books, including her latest, which is The Waters of Star Lake. I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments as we visit with her at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. You spend... I think one of the things that I enjoy about the book is that I'm quite familiar with the area
mm-hmm.
of Wisconsin, and you
we have a cabin north of Mercer.
And yeah, we'll talk about that a little bit.
That it's a family cabin that my grandfather built in 1926-27 with my father and some other men from our hometown, which was Manawa. Excuse me, and it has always been a place for people from our hometown to come up and fish or hunt. And my grandpa said, started a journal immediately. Anybody who came there was supposed to, supposed to write in the journal about the wildlife they saw, how many fish they caught, what the weather was like. And it's such fun to look at those old journals.
Yeah.
Of course, a lot of them are written in pencil and they're kind of faded. But it's just a delight to see that my grandmother actually went out and fished. And sometimes they were there in September and it was snowing. And and the people who came, the Boy Scout troops. One time there was a note that said, I broke into your cabin last night, borrowed a blanket. Thanks a lot for the hospitality. I think that was in the 1930s. So you never know. Well, we love going up there. It's totally off the grid. It was off the grid before off the grid was
mm-hmm.
the in. Thing to do. Yeah, mm-hmm. before off the grid was in. Yes. There's an outhouse, no electricity, no plumbing. So you have to bring along drinking water. We bathe in water from the lake.
Mm-hmm.
The cabin, I went through everything in the cabin, and that's in the book. Everything that's in the cabin is in the book. I put down every item that we have in there, including the campfire, marshmallow tin that holds the journals and so forth, because that's how it sounds authentic, because it is real. And I brought something for you that was also from that area, and this is a footprint.
A wolf print, I'll bet.
Yes, from the pack that we have around our cabin. It's from the Cedar Lake pack that has some black wolves in it, and I think that is just a treasure. That was given to me by folks at the Timberwolf Alliance, which is in Manitouish Waters. But isn't that cool?
Oh, it's very cool. And, of course, wolves are in the play a role in the story.
Oh, yes, they do. The first night that that Natalie is there, she lets her dog out to do her thing in the dark, and the dog doesn't come back, so she has to go out and find the dog, which is very unusual. Usually the dog goes out and comes right back in. And that is the first chapter. And I have to say, when I told the idea of this to my book club, there was total rage. One of them said, if that dog dies, I will never read this book. I will never read anything else that you read. So at the beginning of chapter one, I have a quote from Ginger, who is the bartender. She says, right off the bat, you've got to own up. The dog doesn't die. So I'm not revealing anything that you shouldn't know to read the book by telling you that. But so the dog does not die. But this is not unusual. We have people who have a cottage several houses down from our cabin, and they had two labs that were attacked in the same way, only in the morning, by wolves. And so it is something that you need to take precautions for now when you're in the Northwoods, because the packs have grown considerably. And we'll talk about that later in the hour. But yeah. That is a part of my book, yes. And I wanted you to see this amazing footprint.
And you know what? Everybody else is going to have a chance to look at it, too, because Judith popped in here and took a picture with her iPhone. And she is, well, as we speak, she is uploading that to my Facebook page.
So cool. That's wonderful.
So we will have that up, I would guess, in pretty short order.
Well, it's almost the size of my hand. I don't have real large hands, but it's almost the size of my hand. They're very large. So the reason that this book came to be was because one day we were in Mercer, and I think Dell had forgotten his jacket at Culver's and Stevens Point, which is where we usually stop halfway, and he needed a jacket. So we went to this store that's kind of out of town, and we were just leaving, and there was a truck parked there that had a bunch of wooden boxes in the truck and square boxes, and stretched over the top of them was a black bear. Each paw was tied to the side of the truck, and the head was over the back end. And I yelled at Del, stop, because I really wanted to see what this was all about. So I got out and went over and looked, and there were dogs in these boxes. There were six dogs, and this bear, you know, it had his tongue hanging out like dead animals always do, which always looks so creepy. It's kind of like they show it in cartoons, too. It's just, but it, the fur was blacker than black and glossy, and I couldn't help but touch it. And so I said to the guy, what is this? What are these dogs? Are they labs? They look like. And he said, no, they're plot hounds. They're used for bear hunting. And he didn't seem to be very interested in talking to me. He was talking to some other guy. But I kept asking questions about, I didn't know that bears were used, I mean, that dogs were used to hunt bears. And so I started to put two and two together. And I'm also one of those people who picks up every real estate brochure, every shopper, every free piece of paper you can find in the grocery store up there and the Ironwood News and so forth. And I had noticed ads in there for bait, bear bait. And I didn't know what that was about, because it would say cherry pie filling, old donuts, bubble gum, jam, jellies. So I started asking questions about that, and I learned how you bait bears. Well, then I found out you bait the bears go to the bait, you send your dogs out, and then the bear goes up the tree, and then you get to shoot the bear, which I'm not a member of PETA. Mm-hmm. And I'm accustomed to hunting. My family's always been a hunting family. But something about that did not appeal to me. And so, okay, here's one of my issues that I can use in my book. And so I managed to work that in. And the same thing with the wolves, about how we must take precautions now when we're in areas where there are wolves. And Natalie discovers a way to protect her cabin from wolves for the summer, which I had quite a time researching, because I didn't know. I asked what can be done, and then I found out about fladry. So that was new to me also.
And fladry is, explain what that is.
Well, you put these metal posts around, and then you put wire around, and then you put flags that'll wave in the breeze, and that scares. The directions are in the book, and they're also online. That will keep wolves away for maybe 3 months, but then they get accustomed to it, and they'll trespass it. Yes.
Sarah Rath, our guest today, having a great time talking with her today about her new book, The Waters of Star Lake. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest author, Sarah Rath, who has written The Waters of Star Lake. And we get a nice Facebook comment from Marge, who said, I just finished this book on Saturday, and my immediate thought was, please, 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 let there be a sequel. Love the Star Lake book, but this was even better. I think it's super that Wisconsin Public Radio supports our Wisconsin authors. I get a lot of my reading ideas from Chapter a Day and other WPR programming. We'll be listening today and sure hope we get to read about those wonderful characters again. So already.
That's good news, really. I do actually have a vague idea of one more Star Lake book that I want to do. But I'm not going to tell you about it.
I thought, well, there's got to be some resolution there on some relationships.
Oh, really? Which relationships?
Well, Natalie.
Yes. Natalie Waters, and it's her cabin. That's why it's called The Waters. It's a Waters cabin.
Yeah. And there's a couple of potential suitors
That's
for
right.
her.
That's right. Yes. Mm-hmm. One of them is now up in the Boundary Waters. He may stay there. You get to feel very powerful as an author. You have control over the lives of these, and the characters seem so real. It is so hard when you hand in your final manuscript and you say goodbye to these characters. I am actually depressed for quite a while. My friends will tell you I've given up my children, truly, these characters that I've created out of my own head, thin air, my head, yes. but that's where they were born, and I birthed them, and then I give them up to the world. So I have no more control over them. So if I write a sequel, then I get to play with them again.
Well, I hope you do. And Judith has the photo up now. Oops. Yeah, the photo of the track.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, probably about 4 inches.
To look at it again.
Yeah, about 4.
It's a pretty good size, yeah.
About fist size.
Yeah,
about
right, the size definitely.
Of a man's
yes,
fist.
Yes, right, and you can see the nails, too, very clearly.
Very clearly.
Yeah.
So
they could do some damage, yeah.
Yeah, so definitely take a look at this. Go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and take a look at it because it really is pretty cool. You've written in this book about Chicago gangsters who used the North Woods as a place to go while things kind of cooled off mm-hmm. for them. How did you research that? And is it a story that captured? Must be something that kind of captured your imagination.
Well, as I said, my family had gone to our cabin up in north of Mercer since I was a child. And on the way, you pass Little Bohemia, which is on Highway 51.
Yeah.
Can't miss it. They got those big concrete tree trunks out in front. Well, it used to be a resort, and now it's just a restaurant and a bar. But they still have marvelous food.
And, I've eaten there many times.
Yeah, and they have a little museum, which used to be free, but since the Johnny Depp movie came out, they'll now charge you $5 to see the museum. And it's a sweet little museum. They have kept the bullet holes that came through the windows, and they have a man's shirt, and they have a valise, and they have some shoes that belong to the gun malls that were there, and some shaving cream, and I should know it all by heart because I've seen it so many times. I'm just fascinated by the sweetness of it because it's such a dear little part of Wisconsin history, although, of mm-hmm. course, people were killed. But the movie had it wrong, of course. The G-Men landed in Rhinelander in a snowstorm. It was snowing when they mm-hmm. came to Little Bohemia, not summer. If you watch the movie with Johnny Depp, there are leaves on the trees.
Yeah.
And it was snowing, and the Model Ts broke down, and they some of them had to ride on the on the running boards, and some fell off. And then when they got to Little Bohemia, they ran in the ditch, and it was just like a comedy, really. So I wanted to talk about, I did a lot of research into that and found some material that I could utilize here because I wanted to get the story straight. Initially, I had the idea that I wanted to have Ginger in the book and Lily, and that I wanted to develop Natalie Waters. And yet I wanted a third plot line beside Wolves and Bears. And my son Jay, who's also a writer, said, well, what about the Dillinger thing? And I said, that's all been done. You know, been there, done that. He said, not the Dillinger buried treasure.
Uh-huh.
Aha, yes. When Dillinger was fleeing...
Jay would know this.
Jay would know that, yes. He deserves credit for this. When Dillinger left, he and this other guy jumped out the back window and took off and supposedly buried a valise with $120,000 that had been... from certificates that had been cashed in St. Paul the day before. And it's never been found. Now, you can say, oh, that's baloney, but I have friends who own property next to Little Bohemia, and they say every summer their place is overrun by treasure hunters. And there are websites devoted entirely to the Dillinger treasure.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yes. And John Dillinger left, supposedly told someone after he got back to Chicago that the treasure was buried. There were three trees in a semicircle. Well, Ginger finds this information. Of course.
Yeah.
And she wants to do a treasure hunt. So she hooks Natalie and poor Lily, who's not exactly all there, and Natalie's granddaughter, who is forced upon her for the summer, who's a very interesting character and really should appear again. Her name is Minnow. So they go on the hunt, which they called Thunder Snow, and it takes them several times and is... Okay, I had to restrain from making it slapstick because it was just such fun to write. I had great fun.
I can believe that.
It's a delight to write those chapters.
You know, Minnow is a very interesting character. I was sad to see kind of reach the end and not know how
really
things turned out for her too.
Well, I'm not going to say because then people wouldn't read the book. But I thought she changed considerably.
Yeah.
The book. But she is an interesting character. And initially she was going to be goth because I didn't know anything about emo, E-M-O. And one of my granddaughters said, oh, you've got to make her emo. And I said, what is that? Well, it means it's emotionally, now I've forgotten the word. Emotionally, I'm always worried that this has happened to me on the radio. Anyway, she hasn't had emotionally deprived.
Mm-hmm.
And so she has had a difficult childhood. And she kind of keys in with Ginger and Lily, who are more grandmotherly to her than Natalie is, actually. But I don't want to give the story away. But Minnow plays a really important part in this book. So you have three generations of women, really. Strong women. You're right.
Yeah, they're strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Well, when you write, how do you write? Do you get up in the morning and start writing, or do you?
No, I get up in the morning, I walk out the driveway and get the paper and come back and I copy the Sudoku for my husband, and then I go in and check my email and Facebook, and then I come back and read the paper and eat my oatmeal, and then I go in and start writing, probably about 9:30. And I have found recently, now that I've thought about it, my writing day pretty much coincides with the hours that my children used to be in school.
Hmm.
I'm pretty much done about 3 or 3:30.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started writing, my children were toddlers and then, you know, in grade school. So I wanted to be done in time for them to get home to school. And that's it. By 3, I'm about have had it. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a routine that's just become ingrained.
Yep. Sometimes it'll continue right through lunch. I do a lot of research. this may be fiction, but the factual stuff is real. And part of that is because I've done so much nonfiction. You'll know with the Bennett book, the Bennett biography that came out a couple of years ago. Oh, my God, that book about did me in. Doing a biography for a scholarly publisher and the footnotes and the bibliography and everything having to be exact and so many citations. So, and when I did my book about cows and my book about pigs, those are library books. So my facts are factual. In fiction, you can bend the facts a little bit. For example, I don't want to say about the Dillinger treasure because
No, don't give that away.
No, but the other stuff is real.
Yeah, and you deal with your themes are often loss and rebirth.
Oh, okay.
I think. What do you draw on for those stories?
I didn't know that I had that theme, but
I think so.
Really? I like to take areas of Wisconsin that we think we're familiar with but don't really know. Like, for example, in Night Sisters, which is my middle child, my middle novel, mm-hmm. which is about the spiritualist camp at Waniwok, which has been there since the 1890s. And people still go there for readings by mediums. And it's open now. It's open from Memorial Day to Labor Day, and it's busy. And it's a piece of Wisconsin's history that is very serene and beautiful and quiet and restful. And it's a wonderful discovery for people to just go take a picnic out there and learn about this place. So I wanted to write about that. I guess that does have to do with rebirth and
I was thinking, like, in terms of Natalie, for example. Natalie's...
Yes, she's had a loss. Her husband has died.
And that's wearing heavily on her at the beginning of the book, and still is, but in a totally different way at the end, I think.
This
and she's moved on.
Kind of way for her to handle her grief. She comes to the cabin for the summer to prove that she can stay there on her own and heal and recoup. And it doesn't, her recovery does not occur the way she thought it was. She thought she'd sit on the dock every day with a cup of coffee and or a glass of wine, you know, and just sort of bliss out. But she's very busy. It doesn't turn out that way at all.
You can join in, too. If you have a question or comment for our guest today, Sarah Rath, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Have you read her books? Have you enjoyed them? Give us a call. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Your research on hunting, the wolf hunting, you worked with a guy who I've had on this show more than once, several times actually, Adrian Whiteover.
Right, yes. Adrian was a superb guide for me in this book, and his wife, Sarah Bowles, also. I corresponded with him via email, and then we met them, we stayed with them, went on a wolf hunt. A wolf howl up at Cable, and I'll be doing the same this summer. I'm going to be doing a book signing at Redberry Books in Cable, and it happens to coincide with the Natural History Museum in Cable having a wolf howl event, which is pretty cool because I get to go stand in the Shawangunk Forest at night with the mosquitoes listening to Adrian and his wife call the wolves and expect to hear them howl back, which is just the most goose pimply experience.
It is.
Ever. We've had that at our cabin. One summer we took the cat along as well as the dog, and we're all sleeping in the same bed, and blow out the lantern, and we hear the loons, and all of a sudden there's one wolf making a howl, and then there's another wolf that howls with it, and the cat sat up, the dog sat up, Dell sat up, I said, my God, it was just the most incredible moment in the Northwoods to hear these sounds and feel the wilderness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the sounds, and when they're very close.
Yeah.
I enjoy that,
but it does. There are hackles in the back of your neck. If you don't know where they are, all you have to do is just hear a wolf howl not too far away, and you'll find out. But yes, we do have the wolf was not removed from the federal endangered list when I wrote this book, but it was removed in December. And at that time, Governor Walker wanted the DNR to handle removing some of the wolves from Wisconsin because we do have a large number of wolves. In the 1950s, I don't know how old you were then, Larry, but there weren't any wolves in Wisconsin.
No, not very old.
Because they'd, well, I was in my teens, and there weren't any wolves. And then they started moseying in from Minnesota and Canada. They were not brought in by the DNR, like a lot of people would like to believe. And they started multiplying. You know, wolves will have a litter of several pups a year, and it mm-hmm. doesn't take long for the numbers to get up. Well, we have now probably 850, maybe more, because of the new pups this spring. And that's really too many for the state to handle. So there have been some difficulties with some farm animals, and often bear dogs will be attacked because of the bait situation, and they will not harm people. I frequently hear that, oh, you got to watch out for these violent wolves. They're really horrible things. They're bloodthirsty creatures. There was an article in the La Crosse Tribune over the weekend, and in my book, as a sideline, there is a group called the Howlers who are against wolves. And there were a couple of letters to the La Crosse Tribune about the article about the wolf hunt this weekend that sound like these guys could belong to the Howlers. One wolf is way too many wolves. They serve no purpose. At least a mosquito is food for bats. The other one says, Indian art, movies, cartoons have all softened the look of the wolf as a cute, cuddly, majestic creature. In reality, they scare, kill, hunt, track, and stalk, and they don't know wild game apart from kids, pets, and other possible meals or victims. They're vicious, and it's only going to get worse. Pay up or shut up, lock and load. So these people, I think, they have a... What is it with Wisconsin wanting to hunt all the time? I mean, there's this feeling that sandhill cranes are ribeye in the sky, and, I mean, we shoot mourning doves. And, again, I'm not a member of PETA, but I think that the wolf hunt proposal is a good idea because we do need to reduce the numbers. But I think there should be some modifications, and I think that it should be limited to certain parts of the state, not the whole state. And mostly in the areas where there are problem wolves who have caused difficulties with cattle herds and dogs and so forth. And it should be a much shorter time period. They want the season to be October 15th to the end of February, which would include pregnant wolves. I don't think shooting a mother wolf is a really cool idea. I mean, that's not a macho thing to do. Mm. And I don't think they should allow hunting with dogs. I don't think they should allow hunting at night. And I think there should be more input from wildlife biologists and from tribal leaders who were pretty much ignored when this wolf hunting bill was put together. So I'm not against it entirely, but I think there should be a few changes and modifications made.
And many of those issues you just talked about are not in your book, but in some ways, at least part of that is in the book.
Well, Natalie's not against wolves. She likes wolves, and she likes the idea of wolves. It's just that she wants to be cautious with them. And I think if you're up north now, you do have to take some precautions. My sister was at the cabin, and her dog was running free, and a neighbor said, you really shouldn't let your dog run free up here. It was chasing a deer. He said, we've got problems with wolves. It'll, you know, might cross wolf territory. So you do have to take some care. It's part of the wilderness that we love. It's part of the Northwoods that we cherish. But, you know, you just have to be smart about it.
Well, in your, there's some work that gets done on your cabin.
Yes.
are you thinking of doing the same in real?
No, I'll tell you why. Because I own this cabin with my brother and sister. Have you ever tried to get anything done with three people? It's impossible. Three people to come to a consensus. It just doesn't work. My husband did a great deal of work trying to prop up the cabin. It was sort of sagging to one side and rotting. You know, it was not built to last.
Right.
My grandpa would be stunned to realize that building is still there. And so Dell went underneath and built a new base for it and propped it up and took out all the rotten wood and it's livable. It's a couple steps up from camping. With my royalties from Star Lake Saloon, I bought a new bed for the cabin, so that makes staying there a lot more comfortable. But no, we're not going to make any changes. We're proud that we're off the grid. My sister said the other day that she wished that we could vacuum. And that when she goes up this summer, she may take along one of those little hand vacuums to mm-hmm. just get the stuff out of the corners, but then she'll probably have to throw it away. She doesn't know how long the battery would last. And I said, I don't think we want to light the place up because we never might want to stay overnight there again if we really know what it's like. There's something to be said for not knowing everything that's around. We did put a couple of skylights in a couple of years ago because it's very dark on a rainy day and not much to do except play cards and read by lantern light.
And the skylights are, yeah, skylights are...
make a big difference, yes.
Yeah, as long as they don't leak.
They don't leak. Oh, Larry, there is a story behind the skylights that I really can't get into in detail, but it's very interesting because we hired a group to put a new roof on the cabin. Mm-hmm. And you know northern Wisconsin. Yep. It's full of characters.
Yep.
We discovered that the group that we had hired to do our roof was the local chapter of the KKK.
Oh.
That's another book. maybe that'll be in the sequel. I need to use that somewhere.
Oh, my goodness. Well, what are you working on right now?
I'm currently working on a historical novel. That's something I've been working on for, I don't know, 10, 15 years, and it's never... it's been haunting me, and I really need to get that out of my system. And then I will do a third Star Lake book that I sort of have. I keep making notes. I have this notebook with me that I keep track of things that I want to put in books. And so there are notes here for one of the game warden was supposed to be a Kiefer Sutherland type. Well, he didn't. He was not Kiefer Sutherland. He was more like the other guy in 24. He was like... Bill. Anyway, I make notes all the time. And I also want to mention, before I forget, I'm going to be doing some appearances and some readings.
That was my next question. Yes. Where are you going to be?
Okay. I'm going to be doing a one-day workshop up at the Clearing in Ellison Bay on Friday, July 27th. It's called So You Want to Write a Novel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it starts at 9 o'clock in the afternoon and goes morning and goes into the afternoon, and lunch is included. And then I'll be doing a week-long class up there from September 30th to October 7th, and that's flash fiction, which is really short fiction under 1,000 words, and it's lots of fun. But this coming Saturday, I'll be at the Southeast Wisconsin Book Festival at UW Waukesha from 4 to 5. I'll be talking about my mm-hmm. work and reading, and I'll be signing books afterwards. Next Sunday, the 17th, I'll be at Room of One's Own at 2 o'clock. And you got that?
Yep.
And then I will be at the Arcadia Bookstore in Spring Green at 7 o'clock on Friday, June 22nd.
Do you have all this up on your website, on a website?
Yes, I do, on my website, www.sararath.com. Yes. And also, I wanted to mention that if anybody's interested in learning more about timberwolves in Wisconsin, you can contact the Timberwolf Alliance, which is at www.discoverycenter.net. And that's in Manitouish Waters. And they have a lot of interesting wolf information, and they sponsor wolf howls and...
We'll put that up on my Facebook page at the
sure.
Larry Mueller Show as well.
Right.
Sarah, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Love being here.
Oh, well, the next book, let me know.
I sure will. I wouldn't miss this for anything.
Sarah Rath, our guest today, author of The Waters of Star Lake, a wonderful book. I really enjoyed it, and I think you will enjoy reading it as well. It's great to have her with us. We're going to switch gears coming up and talk about grilling. I just got a new grill. I got a new gas grill for the first time ever. And so I'll bring that up with Mad Dog and Merrill next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.